I went to the downtown Hartford campus, our beautiful downtown Hartford campus, and I sat down with Jennifer Necci-Deneen. She's on the public policy faculty at UConn, and she's a nationally known expert on public opinion research. She also worked with me on the late lamented UConn poll, and I wanted to ask her some general questions about polling and about how to decide if a poll is reliable, and also wanted to talk to her about the midterms and what people should be looking for when they read news reports about opinion polls.
I think a lot of people tend to see polls as purely a predictive tool, but that's not really the purpose of a poll, right?
No, yeah, they're not predictive, and they have a short shelf life. And so polls are really, they're taking the temperature, or the pulse, we like to say, of what a race might look like at a particular moment in time. That doesn't mean that's what the race is going to look like at the end. And so we're often, pollsters are often held to numbers that they put out maybe in October, especially when we're talking about the midterms. And the dynamics of a race are going to change quite a bit. Midterm elections, voters tend to make their minds up much later than they do in a general election. The campaign season is a bit shorter. It may not feel like that, but it is. And they're getting less information. There's less advertising early on. You know, even though congressional races have gotten expensive, candidates are really consolidating their spending closer to election day. And so voters aren't getting as much information. If you look now at the difference in numbers between, let's say, a sample of all registered voters and a sample of likely voters, those numbers still look very similar right now, which makes me think that over the next 2 weeks, things are going to move a little bit as voters firm things up in their minds.
And we hear that a lot, likely voters. Talk a little bit about how pollsters determine who is a likely voter.
Sure. It's everybody's secret recipe, or we like to call it the special sauce. Likely voters are determined by asking voters a series of questions about their interest in their race, the knowledge of the race, whether or not they favor a candidate or not, so whether or not they've made up their mind, and their intent to vote on election day. Some pollsters have a fairly loose likely voter model, so they might ask two or three questions. Some pollsters have a more extensive likely voter model that's like six or seven questions.
And one thing, too, I think a lot of people are suspicious, or people who don't know much about polling are suspicious. They say, like, well, how can you talk to a limited number of people and make conclusions based on the general population? But polls have a pretty good track record of that, right?
Well, if we select our people carefully and we select them properly, then we can get a true sample of the population. And it's not going to be exactly the same result that we would get if we talked to everybody. That's what that margin of error is about, that plus or minus number that goes with the results. But, you know, when you make soup, you don't have to drink the whole pot of soup to see how it tastes. You just have to make sure that it's stirred appropriately and that, you know, you haven't just skimmed off the top.
Quinnipiac did a poll, I think, a few days before the Senate vote on Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court. Before that, there had been a lot of sort of media coverage and media essays and things about kind of like this is going to really inspire women to vote Democratic. This is provoking this anger among women.
Right.
And the Quinnipiac poll showed that among white women, it was basically evenly divided. I think it was 45-46. What does that tell you when you look at something like that, when you look at the demographics of a poll? I mean, is that something that you pay close attention to?
It is something that we pay close attention to, but it also, to me, that says more about the narratives that we develop than it does about polling. And I think sometimes when polling doesn't fit our narratives, people assume that it's wrong and or that it's biased or some. And I don't think that's fair. I think, you know, one of the things about what we're seeing with the relationship to Kavanaugh, you know, and the expectation that it would change women. Part of that is just there's not an expectation that it would change men, right? And so gender dynamics work in both directions, but we create this narrative and the media plays out this narrative. And so I think part of it is that narrative implies a lot of things. It implies that gender is more salient to people than other characteristics or other attachments, including their partisanship. And the political science literature tells us that's not necessarily true.
When I was at UConn as an undergrad, one of my professors, Howard Ryder, said, this is a really boring truth, is that Democrats vote for Democrats and Republicans vote for Republicans.
Right. It's true. And we're seeing that with the Kavanaugh data. You know, there's a narrative that says Kavanaugh motivate Democrats to come out and increase Democratic enthusiasm. And then there's another narrative that says it's going to rally Trump's base and increase Republican enthusiasm. And what we're seeing is it's made the blue voters bluer and the red voters redder. And those people weren't going to change their mind anyway.
the narrative that the election will come down to turnout is kind of boring. But, it, I mean, that's sort of what polls tell us, right? That I mean,
the election will come out down to turnout. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I, you know, appreciate that the media is looking for an interesting narrative. But there's a lot of work in political science that tells us that these game changer events, or what some scholars have named them, really are not game changers, certainly not in public opinion. They might move the needle a little bit temporarily, but they're not making a lasting impact. What's really interesting, so the New York Times and the Upshot are collaborating, and they're doing a live polling experiment. I'm not sure what I think of the idea of the experiment overall, but their goal is to try to increase the transparency and inspire confidence in the polling process and sort of uncover or show to the world all of the different choices that pollsters might make. And when they're doing that, they're showing their results, but they're also showing their results under different turnout assumptions. And then they're showing their results under different weighting assumptions. Weighting is a statistical adjustment we do to the data to correct for non-response when some groups of voters don't respond in a significant number. And so on one hand, it's great because you can go on their website and you can look at how your polling estimates or predictions about the election might look different under different scenarios. I think there might be a downside too, because it implies a certain level of understanding or knowledge. You know, this can inspire confidence and sort of unwrap the process, but it can also maybe make it look a little bit suspect and like it's malleable. You know, these different voter turnout models are not based on just guesses or what we think might happen. I mean, there's theory that goes behind them. So there's different theoretical models we can use to make decisions about the data.
So, you know, everything we've talked about, kind of giving people a primer on what to look for polls, how they're not predictive. Who's going to win in 2020? No, I'm not.
Is it Taylor or Kanye?
Yeah, that's right. No, I guess there's a last question. What should people be expecting in terms of polling between now and Election Day in the midterms? Is there anything they should look out for? Is there anything they should pay close attention to?
It's important to look at the body of work being done. So what I wouldn't do is put too much faith or stock in any one piece of information. I think it's important to, as I said earlier, gauge a poll in the context of the other polling you're seeing in that state. But in lieu of that, also in trends that you're seeing. Sometimes polls, outliers can be an indication of movement, but sometimes they're just, you know, they're just estimates that are not as close to the final outcome as some others. And so I think it's really important to look at the national trends and the direction that things seem to be moving in general and not just focus on one poll.
All right. So that was interesting. And thanks again to Jen. If you want to follow her on Twitter, her Twitter handle is at JNecciDineen. That's JNecciDineen.